Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
Do you feel like you got to see the people you wanted to see, and at the same time, the people you didn't want to see and you didn't have to see? I mean, you feel like it was...
What kind of question is that? Right. So we know what you're talking about.
I didn't see Gar come in and pat you on the and say, hey, Jimmy, thanks for everything.
It's okay. I don't need to pass on the I don't need to speak to everybody. I'm completely fine. I'm content with who I am. Coming here to play basketball. I wish them the best of luck. Walk out with no pass on the.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media, on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Well, Matt, this is the first time we're back since Friday night. Hopefully you enjoyed that game as much as I did. Both Matt and I were at the game. We did our giveaway on Friday, and man, I don't think we could have picked a better game, even with the circumstances that were surrounding the game with Butler and Gibson and Tom Thibodeau. Like, just the game alone, if you'd swapped any other team out, I don't think we could have picked a better game to go to this entire year.
Yeah, no kidding, man. It was a lot of fun. Shout out to our contest winner, Robert, and his dad, Rob Sr. We had a great time with you guys. It was really fun getting to meet you, getting to chat with you. And you know, just talking to them a little bit about our process here at Locked On Bulls and getting to know them. It was so much fun. They could not have been nicer. So, you know, hopefully we'll be doing another giveaway of some kind coming up in the near future. Thank you again to everyone who participated in that one. Yeah, I mean, you're right, Jordan. As far as a game to go to, obviously when you and I were talking about maybe doing a tickets giveaway, that one, it's the one that was circled on everybody's calendars, Bulls fans, Jimmy Butler, Tom Thibodeau, Taj Gibson. And we were, you know, we were talking with Robert and his dad at the UC before the game started, just, you know, how do we think this game's going to go? Hopefully we can keep it close into the second half, but we were all predicting that Jimmy Butler and the Wolves were going to make pretty quick and easy work. And wow, I mean, nobody really saw that coming. The great duel between Jimmy Butler and Zach LaVine, particularly in the fourth quarter, back and forth as the Bulls are making that comeback. And I know that you and I are really on board for this tank being back on after that 7-game losing streak and trading Nico. And that's all well and good. But I got to tell you, I mean, being in that United Center crowd for that Bulls comeback in the second half, when LaVine hit that three ball to tie it, when LaVine made those three free throws to take a lead in the final minute, I mean, it was electric. And tank or no tank, that was just some of the most fun I've ever had as a Bulls fan. It was really great to feel that energy in the building when everybody knows that this season is going to have its ups and downs. But everybody in that building wanted the Bulls to pull that one out that night. It was so much fun.
Yeah, I want to dive into this game a little bit because there were a couple things, especially like you touched on at the end of the game, that I kind of want to talk about, decisions that were made. And obviously we're going to get into the Wizards game too that followed on Saturday. Talk a little bit about Bobby Portis being ejected as well. Kind of get your thoughts on that perspective about players, because I just have this growing feeling about Portis and the way people perceive him around the league that I don't really think is fair, but we can get into that. Also want to touch around going around the NBA because Cavs they might be back. And LeBron.
Speaking of, I mean, things that are back on, the tank's back on, the Cavs totally back on.
So we're going to dive into all of that in this episode. But the first thing, let's start with the Timberwolves game. I thought for the Bulls, first of all, for them to come out and play so aggressively in that first quarter, and this has been something that we talked about for probably a month now, the slow starts that the Bulls were getting off to. Zach LaVine has pointed it out time and time again in post-game interviews. Even other players have said, and they've noticed it too, that they can't get off to good starts and they're trying to battle their way back. Well, in this game, they had 30 points. They had the lead after the first quarter. I think the disappointing thing was giving up a 40 piece to the Timberwolves in the second quarter where they were draining bucket after bucket. But I really liked their turnaround, the Bulls' turnaround, and coming out after the half and scoring and dropping 33 and holding the Timberwolves to 19 to keep this game close. But I guess the one thing that I had a big problem with too, just kind of looking at the box score and just seeing how the way things played out, Lauri Markkanen can't shoot seven shots in a game. Like I know we've talked about this before, but in an important game where you need offense from one of your best players and you want to get him in rhythm and you want to keep him confident and motivated, you got to find a way to get this guy more than seven shots in a game. And I hope that Fred Hoiberg's looking at the box score and saying, like, man, we really gave him seven opportunities to shoot the ball. And on the flip side, Zach LaVine shot the ball 26 times. Like, I'm okay with it because Zach LaVine had an outstanding game. He had a career high with the Bulls, but I think once Dunn gets back, maybe we'll see this change a little bit just by who's running the offense and who they're trying to run the game through. But maybe this also had this had sort of a feeling of maybe LaVine was trying to do a ton against his old team, trying to show out for the Bulls, for Bulls Nation with Butler and Gibson back. Maybe that was just a combination of all those things. But man, Lauri Markkanen's got to take more than seven shots in a game.
Yeah, Fred Hoiberg did make note of that, talking to the media after the Timberwolves game, that the fact that Markkanen only had seven shots. And he said, you know, just plain and simple, we've got to get him more looks than that. I think you're right. The absence of Dunn may be a factor there, as was the fact that LaVine really wanted to take over that game playing against his former team. And it was Markkanen's first game back after missing, you know, a handful of games, being away from the team for a week or so while he was on paternity leave. So maybe that was also a factor, just kind of trying to get his legs back and knock off some of that rust. And then I think you did see Hoiberg make a pretty noticeable change, or at least an attempt to get him more involved. And partly also because LaVine took the night off on Saturday because he's still not playing the second night of back-to-backs leading up to the All-Star break as part of his rehab process. So LaVine wasn't out there as a scoring option, and you saw Markkanen take 19 shots against the Wizards on Saturday. He had a rough night. He was 5 of 19 and only 1 of 8 from downtown, so that's not great. But at least he, after only getting 7 shots in his first game back, Fred said, all right, well, you know, between the fact that he only had those 7 shots and now we're going to be without LaVine on the second night of this back-to-back, let's try to get Markkanen more involved. You know, he'll have off nights, and I was encouraged to see Hoiberg at least make more of an effort to get Markkanen more involved in that second game. And to the point that he was maybe missing Chris Dunn a little bit and has been without those, you know, without a lot of shots in that other game on Friday. I mean, you and I joked about this a little bit when we were at the UC. Every once in a while, we'd look up and check out Grant's box score. I know we're all waiting desperately and impatiently for Dunn to get back, but Jaren Grant had a hell of a game on Friday. I mean, a near triple-double here. 14 points, 11 dimes, and 8 rebounds. I mean, 2 boards shy of a triple-double, so credit to Grant. I mean, he didn't do a whole lot as far as finding looks for Markkanen, but he did have himself a nice game.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I was just going to bring that up, too, is Jaren Grant, probably the best game he's had in a Bulls uniform. I would maybe contest that with his game against the New Orleans Pelicans where it went to double overtime, where he scored 25, 27 points. Obviously, he had those 2 turnovers late in that game that kind of soured all of that. But for Jaren Grant to come out, he played really solid defense, I thought, all night too. Like you had said, 14 points, 8 rebounds, and 11 assists. And we were on triple-double watch for pretty much that whole third quarter into that fourth quarter. So props to Jaren Grant. I also thought that 2 things, Zach LaVine, we got to see Zach LaVine throw down, which was great. We also got to see Bobby Portis throw an absolute hammer down too early on in this game. And man, I love when Bobby Portis gets hyped, and we can kind of get into that in a little bit. But there was some highlight dunks in this game. There's everything that you could encapsulated into this Timberwolves Bulls game that you could have possibly wanted if you were at this game. I guess I want to talk about two. The obvious and the most important part here was the tribute video. How did you feel about the tribute video for Taj Gibson and Jimmy Butler? What were your emotions after that? Was it as good as you thought it was going to be? Did you see anything that you were hoping that would have been better? So how did you feel as their return was on Friday night?
I loved it. I thought the Bulls PR team did a great job with that tribute video. I like how they went back and, you know, they must have sifted through just hours of footage of this Bulls team over the past 7 or 8 seasons that Jimmy and Taj have been around. But I like how a lot of their videos were Jimmy and Taj together. And they had some great moments where it was, you know, Jimmy feeding Taj for a dunk on the court, or Taj helping Jimmy up after Jimmy goes to the deck hard after getting fouled. And there were also great moments of them doing the goofy video stuff that they play on the Jumbotron during the game, where they're like in silly costumes or they're chuckling back and forth and they're laughing. I thought it was really great how they kind of spliced that into the actual basketball highlights, because it really brought forth the thing that I think Bulls fans all miss most about those two guys, is that they were such charismatic, likable guys. Whether you're talking about, you know, even if they had an off night and, you know, didn't lead the Bulls to victory in the stat sheet, they were always two of the more likable personalities that this Bulls team has had in that run of, you know, like the Derrick Rose years, the Joakim years, and then towards the end, you know, the Jimmy Butler years as he was becoming a star. And the other thing I noticed was that they used a lot of footage of young Jimmy Butler. I don't know if you noticed that. And he made a wisecrack when he was talking to the media about the tribute, saying like, yeah, I forgot that I had short hair for the first few seasons I was in the league, and it reminded me to never let myself do that look again, which was funny. But I think it was purposeful, because the Bulls always appreciated Jimmy and his work ethic and the star that he turned into. But I think they kind of soured on ego Jimmy towards the end, and they always really appreciated the young, humble, I'm just a kid from from Tomball, Texas, Jimmy Butler. And I thought that it was really interesting and a really, really fun and nice choice that they decided to use so much footage of Jimmy from his first couple of seasons, when he was just a fresh-faced nobody, and then he became this star that everybody in Chicago fell in love with.
Yeah, I think I can't encapsulate it any better than you just did, because I felt the same way about the video. It was great, and I thought it was, from a lot of people that we at least were talking to pregame, people that were talking to us about the Joakim Noah, Derrick Rose tribute video that they gave them when they came back against the Knicks, a lot of people were saying that this was way better and it was more meaningful. They thought it was better, which is kind of interesting to me, considering like Joakim and Derek, I thought were, I feel like, I don't know about you, but I feel like their role as Chicago Bulls had a bigger importance on the impact over the last 10 years than maybe Butler's was or Gibson's was. So I was interested to see that Butler and Gibson, it was a little bit more meaningful for maybe some fans than others. But I want to get into this last play. So the last minute of this game was very interesting. So not only did we get LaVine scoring the last 11 points to close out the win 114-113, but then we get that foul at the three-point line where LaVine knocks down the three free throws to put the Bulls ahead. They're up one. The Timberwolves come out of a timeout, about 14 seconds left on the clock, and they run an off screen for Karl-Anthony Towns at the 3-point line. Like, I didn't understand that play call by Tom Thibodeau at the end for the Timberwolves. The way Jimmy Butler was shooting, it seemed like he should have the ball in his hands. Andrew Wiggins was shooting really well too. I even made a note to you as this game was going on. I was like, wow, Andrew Wiggins is actually having a pretty solid game tonight. He was 9 for 14. He had 18 points, 4 rebounds. But I was surprised they didn't go to either Wiggins or Butler with that last shot. I know Karl-Anthony Towns can knock down the three, but really, like, to take the lead with 15 seconds left and you're going to call an out screen for Karl-Anthony Towns and a pick and pop. He was wide open. He didn't knock it down. But then the last few seconds, too, they scrambled where Jimmy tried to take that shot from the corner. He obviously missed. Game was over. Bulls win. But it was kind of like it was one of those games where you go down to crunch time. It reminded me of when the Bulls were actually good and they were trying to beat teams in close games, like sort of that heart-wrenching waiting for things to happen. Butler obviously not hitting the game winner, which he probably would have liked. I remember even nudging you at the game and I go, yep, he's going to do it, isn't he? He's going to do it, isn't he? And Butler was going to knock down the shot. He didn't.
Yeah.
But it was all set up to have a perfect dramatic night for a return for Butler. But I just thought it was kind of head scratching, those last few calls and just the way that last minute of the game ended up playing out.
Yeah, I was definitely surprised. I'm pretty sure everyone at the Madhouse was surprised. I'm pretty sure everyone would have put money on Jimmy keeping the ball on that final possession and taking the final shot. I mean, technically he did end up taking the final shot after the offensive rebound, that desperation three from the corner that rimmed out. But I mean, you mentioned how intriguing or odd it was to have Towns take that shot, given the fact that Butler was having a dominant fourth quarter, Wiggins had been playing well, and before taking that three-pointer, Towns was 2 of 7 on the night and had not taken a three-point attempt yet. I mean, we were talking to a lot of the Timberwolves guys in some of our crossover episodes earlier last week leading up to this game about how in their game against Cleveland, Towns was like 6 for 6 from downtown, and it's incredible that he's added that element to his game. But on this night, on Friday night, he was not shooting the long ball, had not taken a three-point attempt in that game, and was 2 of 7 from the field. And that's the guy you give that last shot to? That's the play you call up? Look, I'm pretty sure that in that timeout leading up to that final Wolves possession, Tom Thibodeau told Jimmy, here's what we'll do. Take a look at the defense and then you make the call. You know, either take the shot or kick it out, depending on what the defense is doing and who's got the open look. Knowing Jimmy Butler, I'm very surprised that he didn't say, screw it, I'm going to go ISO and I'm going to take a shot or maybe draw a foul. Because especially, I mean, like, Towns taking a three, they're only down one. You don't even need a three-pointer. All you need is Jimmy Butler to drive and get to the foul line, sink both free throws, and boom, you win. Like, to me, I was shocked that that is not what happened. Jimmy goes ISO and takes a shot, or Jimmy goes ISO and draws a foul. They're down one. I mean, how is it not that simple? It's maybe a little bit of luck that that's how things played out for the Bulls, and they were able to get a stop on that final play. But I was just as confounded as you were.
Yeah, I was waiting for Butler to do something similar like he did last season against the Nets, where he went ISO with the last 8 seconds of the game and knocked down that shot as a buzzer beater.
Jimmy starts to drive, step back in the air.
Oh, happy step back and kiss myself. Big time plays, make big time plays.
Woo! Butler, couple of dribbles, raised up, and bang, down the well it went.
That's kind of one of the more memorable moments of like game winners for Jimmy Butler as a Bull. But I was waiting for that. I was fully embracing myself to be brokenhearted after this game by Butler knocking down that three. Yeah, it was an interesting play call by Tom Thibodeau. But nonetheless, it was great for us. Like you had said about the tank win, too. I held my reservations out on Friday and said, you know, what if the Bulls end up pulling this out? I'm not mad at all. This was a great game to go to. So everything that we could have asked for in a Timberwolves-Bulls game, a reunion for Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson, we got it all. And we also got a Tom Thibodeau technical, too. So if you want to toss that in as like a little bit of an add-on, too, we did also see that. So it was just like everything that you could have asked for in one game, we got.
Got a tech for yelling at his own player, apparently. I think it was Casey Johnson who tweeted out the details of what happened, but he was yelling at Towns for missing a defensive assignment and then got a tech for yelling at his own player, which I think is pretty hilarious.
All right, I want to switch over to this Wizards Bulls game too that happened on Saturday. Quickly talk about this one. Overall, I would pretty much say the Bulls came out flat. It's not surprising after everything that went into the game on Friday. Obviously playing on a back-to-back. LaVine sitting out of this game. I don't even think he dressed in this game. And so obviously that's part of Zach LaVine's rehab, is not playing back-to-back nights. I'm glad that they decided to stay with this, even though LaVine was coming off a career high in scoring against the Wolves on Friday night. I'm glad that they've stayed with this route and made him sort of just kind of accumulate himself to not playing on back-to-backs, sort of just getting back into the rhythm. But I mean, this game was kind of brutal, I'll be honest with you. Trying to watch this game, a career high for Thomas Satoransky for the Washington Wizards with 25. Otto Porter put in another 14. Kelly Oubre had 11. And Mike Scott had 14 off the bench. You look at the Bulls box score, you look at Justin Holiday had a team high of 15 points in this game. You touched on Markkanen earlier on in the episode. He went 5 for 19. Wasn't the greatest night shooting for Markkanen. He was 1 for 8 from three. Denzel Valentine also in these two games, not a great showing from the field. He was 4 for 14 in this game. He was 2 for 10 against the Timberwolves. But that's how I feel like that's how Denzel Valentine is, and that's how he's going to be. He's a streaky shooter. When he's on, he can't miss. But you're going to see games like this that happen. But he contributed in other ways, and I was actually pretty shocked. He had 10 rebounds, 5 assists to go along with his 10 points. But obviously got to get to the most important and the most pressing that came out of this game. And that was the flagrant 2 called on Bobby Portis.
Portis. Oh, Portis is gone.
He's ejected.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't really think that was a... I thought he did go to try to block the ball. You know, here it is right here. He goes up. And he's trying to go for the ball.
He actually got the ball.
I think it's pretty clear cut. You go back and watch that replay and you say, yes, it's an aggressive defense of a guy going up and trying to get a dunk, but Bobby Portis got all ball. That I mean, on his follow through of the block, he also kind of, like, it was forearm against forearm, and that's kind of what caused that's what caused Satoransky to kind of like flail the way he did. And it looked so much worse just because of the way his body kind of flew and contorted in the air. And he fell and landed so awkwardly and hard, kind of the same way that everybody winced when Chris Dunn fell after that dunk against Golden State a couple weeks ago. And he's still working his way back from that. And so, of course, because of the fall, Satoransky's like bleeding from the head and it looks awful. And I think it's just because of the hard fall and because it drew blood, that's why everybody was so freaked out and was like, oh my God, that was such a dirty play. That was a flagrant. We got to eject Bobby Portis. It was a clean block. Like, I don't know what Satoransky was doing trying to go up for a dunk on that baseline drive when Bobby Portis is coming over to protect the rim. It was a clean block. I don't, like, anyone who says that that was a dirty, overly aggressive play, to me, is nuts. It's unfortunate how it happened, and it's unfortunate that he took a nasty fall because of the contact, but that is a clean block, and the fact that he was given not just a flagrant 1, but a flagrant 2 for that, I thought that was absolutely nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple layers to this. I think number one, obviously everybody knows what happened between Nico Mirotic and Bobby Portis this season, like with the fight going on. Obviously, there's that. I think that plays a factor into it. And like, people will say, oh, well, come on. Like, how can that play a factor into something like this? Like, obviously, everybody in the NBA knows. The refs knew about this. So I think between all of that, the perception, the preconceived notion about Bobby Portis coming into this game, I think didn't help his case. And like you had said, if you go back and look at the replay, and there are screenshots where you can literally see Bobby's hand on the ball. Like, I think this is just a case of Bobby Portis having extreme strength over Satoransky, being obviously way stronger than Satoransky is. The way that he was coming to the basket, too, obviously leaving his feet. It's not going to take much to take down the guy, especially if you get all ball. Like, just the way it happened, I don't think is conducive of what they called in a flagrant 2. And then for the Wizards coach Scott Brooks to kind of top off on this, and then for Jody Meeks to do the same thing, I thought was kind of lame. Like, come on. Like, I understand the unwritten rule in basketball where you're not supposed to go up and attack a guy if he's going straight to the basket and he's unprotected. Like, obviously you don't want somebody to get hurt, you don't want somebody to get injured, but you can't fault Bobby Portis for going after the play in the way he did. Like you had said, it was kind of awkward because Bobby Portis kind of went off to the side just to make sure that he didn't get posterized. But he also put his right hand up and blocked the ball. So in that case, I don't understand how they could possibly figure out that this is a flagrant two, even though Satoransky hit the floor hard. And then Scott Brooks topped off on it and said that's a dirty play, that guys should know that it's an unwritten rule that you don't go up and hit or attack or be physical against an unprotected player. I get that, but like, and Jody Meeks topped off too, and this is what the funniest part was, I thought, after the game, was Jody Meeks said after the game that if a guy has a clear lane to the basket, if you can't get there, let him go. Don't try to take him out. Obviously, not everybody abides by those rules, and Bobby Portis clapped back.
But see, that's ridiculous because he did get there. Like, he got there and made a clean block. I don't know what the hell Meeks is talking about. Which is clearly, like, I retweeted Bobby's response to him because it's great. Bobby Portis said, bro, shut up. You sound foolish. Anybody watching the video knows I went for the ball. Not only went for the ball, but got the ball. So for Meeks to say, if you can't get there, let him go. No, I'm sorry. He got there. This is ludicrous to me.
And I'm not telling, like, if I'm Fred Hoiberg, I would have looked at Bobby Portis and I would have laughed at his tweet and said, you know what? Good job. Because I don't want basketball players going to the mindset of, oh, every time somebody goes up to the basket to try and drive on you, that you're just going to sidestep away from it and just let them have the dunk. Like, the aggressiveness from the Bobby Portis there, and obviously the hand on the block, like, he was clearly there. I think all of that encompassed into a bad call by the refs. And I bring up the fight with Nico and Bobby in this situation because the preconceived notion that Portis has around the league, I don't think helped his case in this. And people thought, and I think Wizards fans topped onto this too, thinking Bobby Portis is a dirty player and all of this. And I don't think that's relatively fair. And I thought about it too for a while. I thought about back to guys that I had preconceived notions about, players that I thought maybe were a certain player, and then they came to the Bulls, or I got to know them a little bit better. I read up on them, and I had a completely different thought process about who they were. And I think the one player that I think about the most is Rajon Rondo. Obviously, it has nothing to do with his on-play court, but for the longest time, I thought the guy was a locker room cancer. And I always had this preconceived notion. I never did too much research about it, but just because of everything that had made headlines negatively for Rondo, I came into that season having this notion about Rondo, oh, he's just going to screw up this locker room. He's a ticking time bomb, all these things. And that ended up not being the case. And I feel like in this situation, for a lot of NBA fans, what they think about Bobby Portis and the actual person that Bobby Portis is and the player that he is, I think he gets a bad rap. And if people understood who he really was, I don't think that they would be thinking, like, calling him a dirty and nasty player. And I also want to bring this up to Wizards fans, too. Do you all not remember the NBA playoffs? Do you all not remember Kelly Oubre going straight at a guy and trying to choke him out, throwing him to the ground against that Celtics series? Like, if you want to call a spade a spade here, let's do it, because there's dirty plays, there's dirty players all across the league. So if you want to spar about this, like, we can go back to the NBA playoffs.
How about Nene putting Butler in a chokehold in that 2012 playoff series?
So
huh?
If you want
how
to go
about
back
that?
And you want to call guys out and you want to think bad about some players just over one play. And that's the craziest thing, is like this wasn't even a dirty play. And I think the refs completely overreacted the way Satoransky landed.
Yeah. And before we move on from this, I just want to say one final thing about Bobby Portis and make a comparison. I mean, you've talked about the reputation Bobby may be starting to gain now in the league because of the Nico stuff, and I think that's baloney, all right? You know, guys get heated in practice. We've heard all the stories from back in the day when MJ would start fights in practice with people. It happens, okay? Even among teammates. But the other reputation that Bobby is starting to gain for himself this season, and a good one, is that he's one of the hardest-working guys on this team. And he's trying to make a name for himself in this league, and he's trying to prove that he belongs as a piece of this Bulls rebuild, and he is willing to do the tough work, the grinded out kind of work. And he is a guy who will never give up on a play. And a lot of guys in Bobby's shoes, as Satoransky was driving baseline there, would have probably just said, he's too far, I'm not going to get there in time, I'm just going to let him have this dunk. Draymond Green, one of the most respected defenders in the NBA, a guy who can, you know, people say, oh, he's a perennial defensive player of the year candidate. He can guard all five positions. Earlier this season, Dennis Smith Jr., the stud rookie for the Dallas Mavericks, tried to dunk on Draymond, and Draymond stuffed him. And then he had a soundbite after the game that was like, oh, yeah, man, like, this ain't the D-League. Like, this ain't Summer League. Come on, like, get that crap out of here. Dennis Smith Jr. is never going to dunk on me, ever. Not now, not never. The Warriors play the Mavericks again last Thursday. Dennis Smith Jr., again, similar to the game earlier this season, drives baseline, beats his man off the dribble. Draymond is in the paint in a position to come over and help and sees that even if he tries to get there or maybe not, I don't know if I'll get there in time, maybe I can contest this, or maybe Dennis Smith Jr. is going to rise up and dunk over me. I don't want that. I just told everybody a couple months ago that Dennis Smith Jr. is never going to dunk on me. So what does Draymond do? He kind of makes a switch, but then essentially just scoots himself out of the way and lets Dennis Smith Jr. take the dunk. One of the most respected defenders in this league does that and is worried about his reputation and worried about the clapback on social media for people saying, oh, Dennis Smith Jr. just dunked on you. That is something Bobby Portis would never do. And I respect that about Bobby Portis.
Yeah, quickly to add to that, too, I guess maybe another factor that added to the Bobby Portis flagrant, too, which was totally unintentional, and I hate that this was part of it, but Tim Frazier obviously hit his mouth on Bobby Portis's knee early on in that game. That was completely unintentional, but I think just the fact that Tim Frazier hit his mouth, he was bleeding all over the place, and then this happened, I think all those encompass played into this flagrant, too. Whether or not they actually did, I think they did. They probably had a play, even if it was a small part. But obviously, I still like Bobby Portis. Keep doing what you're doing. The dude should never give up on a play like that. And to me, to 95% of Bulls fans, it was not a dirty play. And Washington Wizards fans, I think, just got a little bit defensive on this play and obviously having to defend their player. But come on, man. Thomas Satoransky, you really think you're going to dunk on Bobby Portis? Yeah, that's not happening. All right, let's get to around the league real fast before we get out of here. I had a chance to catch Cavs and Celtics on Sunday night, or Sunday afternoon, I should say. I also went around and kind of flipped through San Antonio and Golden State this weekend, also following up on the Bulls. I watched a lot of college basketball this weekend as well, but I want to get your thoughts on this new revitalized, revamped Cavs team as they went into Boston and put the beat down on Boston on Paul Pierce Day. And if you saw anything between Rondo, KG, Doc Rivers, they were not happy, and Paul Pierce, they were not happy about this blow up. But what do you think about this new revitalized Cavs team? Obviously, this is only a very, very, very small sample size, but to go into Boston and blow them out the way they did, man, did that look pretty sweet.
Cavs are the favorites, right? You and I talked about this last week, leading up to, and then again after the deadline. Like, you know, are the Cavs now, you know, screw Boston, screw Toronto, whatever they've been doing all season, it doesn't matter. One seed, three seed, doesn't matter. The team that has LeBron James is always the favorites to come out of the East, and we were starting to finally doubt that with the team that he's been struggling with all season long. They make this trade, completely overhaul the roster, and like you said, I mean, it's one game, but George Hill inserted into the starting lineup, a respectable night, 12 points, 2 of 4 from downtown. But then how about Clarkson off the bench? 17 points, 7 for 11. Rodney Hood, 15 points, 6 for 11. They combined to go 6 for 10 from downtown. I mean, the option that LeBron now has to play the pick and roll game with Larry Nance is big time. He was doing a lot of driving and kicking and finding his open shooters. I mean, this team got younger and they got better around the perimeter. And really, that's all LeBron James needs. He needs a team that can run, you know, occasionally, you know, pull the slack when it comes to running up and down the floor, transition offense, transition defense, give LeBron James some help there, and space the floor around him. And remember, like, this is still a team that is waiting to get Kevin Love back, and hopefully he will come back and be himself as they make their way into the playoffs. But I mean, this, you know, again, one game, But wow, a world of difference for this Cavs roster right now. I mean, hands down, I'm ready to say after one game, they're the favorites. They are the favorites to get out of the East.
I think a big factor to this whole entire trade and this flip too, for LeBron at least, and I was telling a couple people this too when we were watching the game. I said, now you're going to see, because the Cavs made those moves, they got the guys out of there that they thought were the cancerous parts of the locker room, which if you read through these stories, I think there's interesting comments and there's interesting stuff from inside sources. Somebody saying moving Dwayne Wade was the biggest part of that. They thought he was the biggest problem in that locker room. Like a lot of us thought on the outside that it was Isaiah Thomas was the big problem of this whole thing, splitting up that locker room. And there was a lot of sources that were saying Dwayne Wade was actually the biggest problem of them all. So you move Wade out, you move Isaiah Thomas
out.
Guess
who was a locker room problem in Chicago last season? Because the answer is Dwayne Wade.
And that's like, I was laughing. I was like, this is hilarious. Like people who didn't believe us last year when we said Dwayne Wade is doing all these things counterproductive for what we wanted him to do. And now he turns around and he ends up doing the same thing to the Cavaliers with his best friend LeBron.
I think you're right. I think the locker room chemistry is going to be a big factor, not just the X's and O's of who's playing and who's in the rotation, because clearly that's going to get better. But you also saw LeBron having fun. And obviously, if you go into Boston, beat the number one seed, and make it look easy on a night when they're trying to honor one of their most glorified retired vets on his jersey retirement night, and you got Doc and Rondo and KG and everybody in the building, you're going to enjoy it even more. But I think part of the Cavs' slump leading up to that deadline where they overhauled the roster is that LeBron was just flat. He looked disinterested in a lot of games. He looked lethargic. And obviously the All-Star break will be nice. Everybody will take a deep breath and, you know, get a little bit of rest. And you'll probably see some LeBron rest, you know, DNP coaches' decisions as they are making their way through March to gear up for the playoffs. But even just like a mental second wind for LeBron to be able to say, okay, you know what? For all the differences I'm having with the front office right now, I respect the moves they made to try to fix this roster and give me a reasonable shot to take this team back to the finals. And who knows? When we get to the finals, we'll see what happens. But at least now I feel like I can commit myself to the home stretch for this team this season. Because if they didn't make all those moves, I'm not sure LeBron would have given a crap if they got eliminated in the first round. Now I think LeBron is ready to try to take this team back to the finals. I think before that huge roster overhaul, he would not have cared that much. Now he's on board. Now he's on board to get back to the finals. And I think just as much as the change in the roster and the basketball differences on the court, LeBron's mentality is just as important if the Cavs want to get back to the finals.
I'm completely in agreement, and that was what I was going to bring up too, is now you'll see LeBron buying in, because not only does he have teammates and does he have control over this team, over these young guys that are actually willing to put in the work as role players and specifically play to their role. Like you've got Rodney Hood there, you've got Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance, which all help. I think Tristan Thompson, even in the one game, I thought he played pretty decent yesterday. You're getting all these young guys to buy into what LeBron wants to do. And I think for the first time in a while, LeBron actually has full and solid control and has the team going in one way. And even said it after the game. He said that he expects excellence out of a lot of players. And he said he knows he expects a lot out of his teammates. But he said he also puts the same pressure on himself. So for a lot of guys, like we said, Isaiah Thomas, sort of a big ego. Dwayne Wade, big ego as well. Like these guys, maybe not wanting to play or not wanting to live up to the excellence or being bagged on by LeBron all the time. That had a factor, and it just clearly didn't work for the Cavaliers. But I'm glad you brought up the fact that now I think we're going to see LeBron totally buy in and just go on a tear till the end of the season. And if he can get some good minutes, and if he can get the best out of Jordan Clarkson and guys like George Hill and Larry Nance and Rodney Hood, this team is going to be tough. It's going to be really tough to beat these guys. But I thought the funny thing too about the Dwayne Wade, just kind of going back to that, is like people didn't believe us when we said what he was doing last year and the way he was kind of feeding and blowing hot air into Jimmy Butler's head, kind of splitting up and fractioning that locker room. He went to the Cavaliers, and the same thing happened there. We tried to tell Cavs fans this in the offseason when they were excited when Dwayne Wade was coming there. Now Dwayne Wade gets to go back to Miami, and he's getting the last laugh. And I think most importantly here, Pat Riley's getting the last laugh. He told Dwayne Wade, you know what? Go get paid by somebody else. In a year and a half's time, he gets paid all that money. Pat Riley doesn't have to pay him. And guess what? The Miami Heat are better than expected, and they get Dwayne Wade for pennies on the dollar to come back. So I think this is an ultimate win for Pat Riley. It's a win for the Cavaliers in general. And yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how this East shakes out now.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, for as good as the Raptors look, I mean, Dwayne Casey has that team playing very well. And as good as Boston has looked all season, I mean, the Celtics just got their butt kicked. Just got their butts handed to them by LeBron's new team. So hopefully we'll get some interesting and exciting series in the Eastern Conference. Hopefully we'll get some series to go to six or seven games. But, I mean, all previous bets are off, right? It's LeBron and the Cavs. If they play like that, on the, making their way through the playoffs, they're going back to the finals. It's that simple.
Quickly, before we get out of here, I got to touch on a college basketball game, and it has Bulls implications too to it. So if you're not surprised at all by about what I'm about to say, then I don't think you're really a Bulls fan. So it was reported that Gar Forman was at the Iowa State-Oklahoma game. And so at first glance, maybe Bulls fans are thinking, oh, okay, so he's going to go watch Trae Young. Maybe. Absolutely not. It wasn't for Trae Young. They have a guy named Cameron Laird on their team who's 6'9", 215 pounds. He kind of looks like an off-brand Jordan Bell. Maybe this is an implication where they're going to look at him for the Pelicans pick. They were kind of hyping him up on ESPN as I was watching this game. But laughable that, of course, Gar Forman is at Iowa State to watch this game. And the one and more important thing...
Ames Mafia, baby!
The one and more important thing that I wanted to bring up to you is, dude, I said it before, I wasn't a big on the Trae Young bandwagon, and over this last stretch of 5-6 games, teams are starting to figure out how to play against Trae Young, and Oklahoma is floundering. And dude, I mean, come on, 39 shots in a game against Oklahoma State. Over the last three games, he is 7 for 32 from three. 7 for 32 from three. He's averaging 6 turnovers in a game. He's not getting his teammates involved. Teams are figuring out how to play defense on Trae Young. He's turning over the ball a ton. So I would just say, if you're a fan of the NBA draft, if you're watching prospects, please don't let ESPN hype you up about these guys, because this is what I think is unfair for Trae Young too, is because ESPN, they find a stud or they find a couple studs in college basketball. They'd even do this in the NBA too. And they just jam content down your throat, and they jam nothing but news 24 hours a day about one guy. And it gets to the point where they go in this three-phase process. They like him, they love him, and then they all of a sudden everybody turns on him and hates him. I said this about Steph Curry a couple of years ago too, is they did the same thing to Steph Curry. And I think for a lot of people that initially loved everything that he was doing, they got people that were so sick of hearing him that they got people to turn on him too. And I think this is what's happening to Trae Young here. And now that he's not playing up to the games that he was having, where he was dropping 43 and 10 assists on people, he was having 22 assists games, he was knocking down shots effortlessly. I think the overconsumption of content of Trae Young, and also teams figuring out how to play against him, I would just say be cautiously optimistic about Trae Young. But I could be completely wrong about him, but I don't think he's this top 10 projected player that everybody thinks he's going to be. And I could be completely flat out wrong, but just from the games I've been watching of recently and them playing in the Big 12 against Big 12 teams, they're figuring out how to play against him. And I don't know if that's going to exactly translate to the NBA.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you have an undersized guard like that, once teams do the work and do the scouting reports and look at the video, they can find ways to minimize the efficiency of a guard that small. And with a special player like Steph Curry, the Warriors have the right pieces around him to when, if it's not a night when Steph Curry's going to go, you know, 10 of 12 from deep and dominate you, they have other players on that team that can win those games. And, you know, even if, and they had that even before Durant showed up. Oklahoma, you know, when Trae Young is not on, is a pretty one-dimensional and bad team. And I think another one of the differences is Steph Curry got a lot of hype because he took a very little-known Davidson team and made a bunch of noise with them in the tourney. Oklahoma hasn't even gotten to the tourney yet, and there's been all this hype about Trae Young. And look, I mean, in the kid's defense, nobody had ever done what he was doing. You know, leading all NCAA players in points and assists that had never been done before. So, yeah, he's had a couple of rough nights where teams are shutting him down. I still think he's a very interesting and exciting prospect at the NBA level, but you worry about his effectiveness as an undersized guard if he doesn't have the right pieces around him. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, so I think another thing to just kind of put numbers behind the context of what I'm talking about with Trae Young. So over the last four games, he's shooting 41% from the field. And from three, I think is more troubling, which we all thought he was like this limitless range three-point shooter. He's only shooting 32% from three. And some of these games are kind of, it's kind of eye-jerking in the point where he went 2-for-14 against Texas. He went 4-for-10 against West Virginia and then 1-for-8 against Iowa State. All I'm saying about Trae Young is I think the overconsumption of content and getting content pushed down our throats, I think, has led to this rise of Trae Young, and obviously with social media too as well. I'm not fully bought in that this whole thing can translate, and I don't think it's fair to Trae Young that he continuously gets compared to Steph Curry, because let's be honest, like, Steph Curry is one of the greatest guards of all time, one of the greatest shooters of all time, and to put that pressure on him. And also, I think there's also another factor too, if you're watching these games, is his teammates are kind of getting frustrated with the shots he's taking. At times he's taking head scratching shots within the first 4 or 5 seconds of the shot clock. Obviously he's still young too, I gotta throw that in there too, but I would be very, very cautiously optimistic about Trae Young going into the NBA draft, at least for right now. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Bulls_Peck, and at Jordan C. Malley. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. The Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central time. Follow us there for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days of NBA coverage. We're there tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central time. We didn't get into an Orlando Magic preview. That's okay. We'll have all the recap for you on tomorrow's episode.
Real quick there, Jordan, for a tank win tonight, it's going to be tough. Bulls are 2-0 against Orlando this season, and tonight, no Aaron Gordon, no Nick Vukovic, no Jonathan Isaac, and no Terrence Ross. So the Bulls will have a tough time getting a tank win tonight.
Oh, wow. Well, we'll have all the recap for you on that on tomorrow's episode. Hopefully you enjoyed our recap of the Timberwolves Bulls game and everything that happened this weekend. But for Jordan and Matt, we are out. Have a great night.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.